afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adusk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today's Friday, November 17th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Well, we must... There was someone who started celebrating Turkey Day just a little too soon, I think. We have gold up today, right now in the aftermarket, $1,590. $15.90 at $1,295, and we were $2 higher. So, and it was in a late-day turnaround. I'm not quite sure. Oil is up big, but I'm really not sure what motivated the gold prices to rise as they did. Silver's up 21 cents today at $17.37. Platinum was up 20 bucks at 956. Palladium was up 5 at 998. It's a day where it was the first time we've seen in a long time where platinum has outperformed palladium by a whole, almost a whole percent. So a good day for platinum also. So, you know, folks, if you believe platinum will return to its place in the pecking order of the precious metals, that it will have a higher price than palladium, and palladium will either fall or platinum will overtake, now's the time to be buying some platinum. Still a bargain at $956 when you have gold also trading at $1,300, as platinum in the past many times have traded above gold. So a good time to be buying some platinum if you don't have it already. The USDX today down 0.29 at 93.63 for the USDX today. Crude oil was up big, up $1.45 at 56.59. And the paper markets today, you know, the Dow's down 100 points. It tried to come back in the last half hour of trade, but we're looking at 23,358. You have the NASDAQ, it's positive, continuing to hit those records at 44 points at 6,782. And the S&P down 6 at 2,578. 10-year yield, 2.35% down, 0.01. Euro, of course, reacted to the weaker dollar, but not by much. Probably have a bigger impact on Monday, the euro, but it was up 0.02 at 1.18 since their markets close at 11 o'clock our time. So they might catch up on Monday. And, you know, yesterday we talked about the fear and greed index. It was, what, 36.39? It did pop back to neutral. Weird things are happening in the markets, and there wasn't any really big news, or unless it comes out now after 4 o'clock, now that the markets are closed, that's when things usually do come out, because they don't want to impact the markets too badly. So I don't really see anything significant. I mean, you had the tax reform, that was, but that was yesterday, and but there was no real action to that. You know, it's just more of this sexual harassment stuff. Massive fire is raging on a roof in Manhattan. I can't imagine that would do it. What I did find interesting, though, I'm not sure how this would impact the markets, but you have, and I'm not sure what this is telling me about this. I've kind of reviewed it in a couple of manners. And that was President Trump. He started paying his own legal bills. That's related.
Paying his own legal bills.
That has been related to the Russia probe rather than charging them to his campaign or the Republican National Committee, and is finalizing a plan to use personal funds to help current and former White House staff with their legal costs, which is most likely his daughter, his son-in-law, and so forth. But I find that interesting that the Office of Government Ethics and a tax firm are working on a mechanism for Trump to contribute to staffers' legal bills that would meet regulatory and ethical standards. White House lawyer Ty Cobb said in an interview, the White House is hoping the issue will be shortly resolved. He declined to elaborate further on the details of the plan. While there is no barring a president from giving gifts to those who report to him, Trump's case raises unique questions about whether his contributions could influence the testimony of staffers. Let's see, it goes on. Cobb said, this is the attorney, said that the White House is aware of the ethical question, has been taking steps to address them. The president has assumed responsibility of his own legal fees, and while he isn't involved directly in the creation of a mechanism, it's important to him that they be taken care of. I don't know if there's any further in there that they give some numbers about what the legal fees are going to cost and so forth. But what I find interesting about this, if this means he's pulling away from the RNP, if the Republican National Committee was paying his legal fees, that means they probably had some insight to what Trump's attorneys, what was going on. They had access to information. Now that they are solely being paid by Mr. Trump, I would think that that would cut off any of that connection or the abilities to know what's going on within the legal. And I don't know if that would be, if that's true or not, but I find that would probably be something to, I would think that if someone is paying someone's attorney fees, that they have perhaps some ability to, or, you know, get some information from the attorneys to follow along if they're paying the bills.
Well, that might apply the other way also. If Trump is paying the legal fees of staffers,
yeah,
he's going to find out what the staffers are up to. Just on the off chance somebody is trying to accuse him, he would, in theory, have access to that information, maybe.
But
that is, regardless of who's paying the attorney's fees, his ethical obligation is to represent his client. I doubt that he can give information to whoever's paying his fees. His business is to represent his client, and it's not going to be easy to penetrate that obligation to the client.
But what if you have this? Wasn't that a conflict? What if you have the same attorney? They wouldn't be able to have the same attorney.
No, you won't have
the
same. No, they won't. That isn't going to happen if they're both defendants and the rest of that sort of. Well, it depends on how they're charged. If they were charged in a conspiracy, in theory, they could have the same defendant or the same attorney, but more than likely, they'd have different attorneys. As for Trump paying attorney fees for the staffers, I doubt that he's doing that to influence the staffers. All right, I doubt, because if it's either their fees are either going to be paid by the Republican National Committee or by the government. I mean, somebody's.
That's not necessarily true.
Well, I don't know if it is or not, but I'm assuming it is.
I wouldn't think the RN, the Republican National Committee, would pay for staffers' fees.
Well, it may be that the government is. And my point is, if they're getting their fees paid anyway by somebody, what do they care?
I don't know.
Who pays the fee? I mean, the question, the issue is, what do I do to get out of this mess? And regardless of who's paying the bill, you know, including whether it's Mr. Trump or Mrs. Clinton, how do I get out of this?
There was, I lost my, what I was going to say, and I agree.
That happens increasingly as you get older, Melody, I can tell you.
and that's not my problem then. I would think that, you can have $30,000, $50,000, $100,000. I mean, attorney fees rack up real, quite quick.
You better believe it.
Some of those that have been interviewed are like Rince Priebus, Sean Spicer. I don't know if those are the ones they really didn't say who exactly were the staffers, but it's unclear whether Trump's offer extends to Michael Flynn, the one that was fired from his role as the national security advisor. That would be a mistake if he paid for his attorney fees. But so it's interesting.
And what's interesting is this just Trump trying to be a nice guy in a way that might be clumsy and inept, or is he playing let's make a deal? Is he up to something, or is he just, because Trump could do something that seemed unethical, and he could do it just by accident.
Well, it could also be the Republican National Committee just saying, "Hey, Trump, your attorney fees. I'm sure Trump's attorney fees right now are probably in the millions, as long as this has been going on, perhaps." So they could be saying, your attorney fees are beginning to dip into our budget for other. We have an election in 2018, so maybe we should part
Well, it's hard to say what's going on there. I don't know. It may be that this was not even Trump's idea.
It could be.
Maybe the Republican National Committee said, "Hey, you got to cut us a break," and Trump,
yeah.
"All right,
we have an election. We have an election next year."
Yeah, it's hard to say.
Yeah, but it's interesting.
When people start giving away free money, you inevitably, especially if they're politicians, is what the heck are they up to anyway? It's hard to imagine that somebody is giving away free money just out of the goodness of their heart in Washington, D.C. They must be up to something, but who is it and what are they up to?
Oh, hold on. This computer just starts talking all the time. Just maybe I can turn it down. All right.
It's like, you gotta train that computer. It's like you train your dog, Ruby. You gotta teach him when to bark and when not to bark.
Well, good luck with that.
Mm-hmm.
Teaching Ruby.
Uh-huh.
She taught me. That's what dogs do. All right, what's next, Al?
I don't know. I've got something. Let's see. Here's the state of free speech. This is a survey that was produced by the Cato Institute, and it has some really fascinating insights into what's happening, how people view free speech. The Cato 2017 Free Speech and Tolerance Service, a new national poll of 2,300 U.S. adults, finds that nearly three-quarters of Americans believe that political correctness has silenced important discussions our society needs to have. All right, I agree with that. The consequences are personal. 58% of Americans believe the political climate prevents them from sharing their own political beliefs. All right, there are things that we are reluctant to say because we are concerned that, oh my gosh, somebody's going to give us some criticism. We're not, our comments are not going to merely be welcome as interesting, even if they don't agree with us. It's, oh, you need to shut up. Like, these data show why censoring offensive speech is difficult. Right? It's not just difficult, it's really impossible. But they say why it's difficult. The reason is Americans can't agree what speech is offensive and should or shouldn't be allowed. What is deeply offensive to one person may be simply a political opinion to another. If we silence speech that any number of people find offensive, we will shut down a wide variety of important political debates. Here's a little more specifics. Now see the conflict and the contradictions here and the confusion. 79% of Americans say hate speech is morally unacceptable. Basically, 80%, 4 out of 5, say hate speech is bad, it's morally unacceptable, but 59% of Americans oppose hate speech laws. And that's not a bad thing exactly. Say, yes, I'm against hate speech, but I don't think there should be a law against it. Why? Because 82%, it's hard to ban hate speech because people can't agree what speech is hateful. Right? 24% think it's illegal to make racist statements in public. Illegal. They think it's illegal, right? Democrats favor banning hate speech against African Americans and Jews. African Americans and Hispanics are the most supportive of hate speech laws. Black and Hispanic Americans most in favor of law banning offensive speech against police. Now, who would have guessed that? I would have imagined that the minorities would be out there saying, hey, get the cops, whatever. No, according to this survey, Black and Hispanic Americans most in favor of law banning offensive speech against police. They're standing up for police. That strikes me as a very surprising result. And their next section, how do Americans define hate speech? Is violence an appropriate response to hate speech? 51% of strong liberals say it's morally acceptable to punch Nazis. Right? Violence is okay if you're punching a Nazi. And this is coming from the strong liberals. And that's probably a small percentage of how many people were interviewed. But 51% of strong liberals, they say it's okay to punch Nazis. 64% of Americans oppose banning Holocaust denial. I think that's a good thing. You know, I don't know what the real number of Jews... What was the real number of Jews who died during the Holocaust at the hands of Nazi Germany during World War II? The official number is 6 million, so far as I know. All right? It could be 5,999,999, though, couldn't it? Or how about 5,999,998? I mean, we don't know what the real number is, and I don't see that there's a problem talking about the issue from that perspective. There are laws in Europe where you can't even talk about this subject. I mean, you can't say, well, I think it was only 5 million or 4 million or 1 million. You might be wrong, you might be crazy, but regardless, what is so special about the 6 million number that it has to be protected by silencing people? And they've done it in Europe. They haven't done it in the United States, but it's advocated, it's talked about. 54% of Americans oppose banning sexually explicit public statements. Okay? You want to talk about sex? 54% say, go ahead, do it. 62% favor a law banning public calls for violent protests. You know, there's a problem with that. And there, you can't just, I know that sounds like a good idea. You can't stand up and say, we need to shoot the SOBs. Everybody with me, get your shotgun and let's go.
Oh.
I get it. I get it that that's a problem. But at the same time, there are problems. And you can't just surrender to the government. And it's not an easy thing. It's not something that's easily resolved. 59% of liberals support transgender pronoun laws, which means you can't call a man who's converted to a woman. You can't call him he or him. Got to call him she or her. Okay? 53% of Republicans favor stripping U.S. citizenship from flag burners. Over half the Republicans say if they burn the flag, strip them of their citizenship. I think that's, I don't like burning the flag, but I don't think you can be stripping people of their citizenship because they don't like what's going on. 58% of Americans favor a law banning flag burning. Again, tough situation. There are a lot of flags. Which ones are the ones that are illegal? For example, you can get an American flag that is red, white, and blue. You can also get a red, white. You can also get an American flag that has a gold fringe on it. Is it equally illegal to burn both flags, or is only one of them? Should only one of them be illegal? Which one is illegal to burn? It's just an interesting study. It indicates this is a complex question, but it's surprising how many people are kind of sensible. They recognize the complexity, they sense it, they understand it, and they're groping with it, and I don't think there's an answer. You got to just let it go and let people say what they want to say. We're going to take a break, a couple of commercials, be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoices of Integrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
With Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
You know, gold is up. Silver is up. Both of them up 1.25%. And I'm running the special. I'm getting low. I have a couple left. $495. I didn't adjust it. And that is for $25 face value of 90% silver. $25. And these are the brilliant uncirculated silver quarters. And a 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle, and includes your shipping cost, $495. So if you've been thinking about it, you better think no longer, because if the prices stay at this level, we will adjust the price Monday. So if you want to call over the weekend, if you listen to this broadcast at a later time, not the live show that we are currently right now at 4 p.m. Eastern time, leave a message on the recorder and I'll certainly give you a call back. Always leave a good time to call and we'll try to make it at that point in time. And 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com and sign up for a weekly newsletter that goes out on Mondays most of the time. Sometimes there's just too much and it takes us, you know, a couple of hours longer, but it's always there. So you know, they passed the tax reform yesterday. It's going up to the Senate. And, you know, everyone is anticipating, you know, the trickle down. You know, that's what these tax cuts are all about. And the White House says that the plan's corporate tax cut alone would eventually raise the average household incomes by $4,000 a year.
What do they mean by eventually?
Yeah, you know, this year, next year, by 2030, you'll get an extra four. And inflation,
when the dollar is worth a third of what it is today.
And inflation will wipe it out. But what it really comes down to is about $75 a week more is what you would. It's about $1.90 more an hour of your wages. So, you know, it's
something.
It's something.
Yeah.
It's something. But it's not, and this is if you get it. But it was interesting, this trickle-down approach. I mean, it was really popularized for the Reagan administration back in the 80s. But actually, it came across, I was reading this, and it actually dates back to at least 1932 by a wisecrack by Will Rogers. And there really is a history that shows a spotty record of changes in the tax code that expected to have trickled down. And it never really worked in any of these instances, you know, throughout history. And it was kind of interesting, and I don't know if I'll post this in the website or not, but Will Rogers may deserve credit for coining that term, and he was ridiculing President Herbert Hoover's efforts to combat the Great Depression. He says the money was all appropriated for the top in the hopes that it would trickle down to the needy, Rogers wrote in his syndicated column in 1932. He says, in fact, Rogers argued money tends to trickle up from the hands of the poor into the hands of the rich. And in the view of Carl Davis, research director of the left-leaning Institute of Taxation Economic Policy, the track record for supply-side economics is not particularly inspiring. We know about President Reagan. The economy did rebound for a couple of years, but afterwards, they had tax You know, you had the Federal Reserve that slashed the interest rates, and the tax cuts increased federal deficits and eventually forced Reagan and Congress to reverse the course and raise taxes. And I think this is what we're going to see now. You know, when Reagan did it, it was in the midst of a deep recession. We're not supposed to be in a deep recession. So that's why Reagan's economy rebounded for a couple of years. Everybody says we're at full employment. So how can we get better? We're already there. We're supposed to be having this. Hey, the stock market is at these all-time highs. So how are tax cuts going to rebound the economy unless the economy really didn't rebound?
Could it be that things aren't as good as government would have us
believe?
Well,
that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. So, and then again, what happens is you have these tax cuts. It's going to increase the federal deficits, and eventually you're going to have to raise those taxes. And when they raise the taxes, it's not going to be on the corporations. So it's going to be on the taxpayers of this country. And it's not going to matter what class that you're in, whether you're in the low end or the middle or the upper. So, hey, I'm positive. I'd like to think, but I'm wondering if some of these tax comments and so forth could have had impact on the stock market today, really kind of looking at this and saying, well, you know what, maybe, just maybe, this isn't going to be the golden tax cut outcome that everyone is anticipating, but we'll see.
No, I understand. It's something, I guess, if they're really cutting taxes and the rest of it, but I wonder if they're cutting them or they're just shifting them around. I'm not sure what it amounts to. The tax package eliminates a number of taxes. For example, the alternate minimum tax is eliminated. State and local income taxes will no longer be deducted from your federal income tax. Student loan interest will no longer be deductible. Medical expenses will no longer be deductible. Yeah. And the one that bothers, and that's going to raise some hackles before this is all over. Yeah, we're cutting the taxes, but they're getting an extra $1.90 an hour off the deal, but you're going to also have to pay more on your state and local income taxes, and you're going to have to pay the state and your student loan interest, and you're going to have to pay your medical expenses. I don't know if there's going to be a real gain. It's a gesture, and we'll see how this really pans out. You know, before this is done, it may work. It may not work a whole lot better than Obamacare. All right, which was sold with a bunch of, we're going to get free medical care and everything's going to be great. And then it turns out it's a disaster. This might be the same thing, but the one that gets me is the estate tax is being eliminated. And the estate tax is that which is imposed on people's estates after they die. Now, I don't care about people that are passing, ordinary people. You leave your house, your car, your kids, your boat to the kids, fine. I don't have a problem with that. But this estate tax does not serve, the elimination of the estate tax does not serve the vast majority of the American people. And I mean 80-90%, my opinion, they're not going to be much better off without an estate tax. But the super rich are going to be much better off, because without an estate tax, they can pass all their wealth down to their children. And their children, without an estate tax, can pass it all the way down to what would be the grandchildren of the originator of the money. Let's talk about John D. Rockefeller. Made, I don't know how much money Rockefeller made in the oil business, but perhaps billions at the time. I don't know if that was possible. Certainly hundreds of millions, maybe billions. I don't know. But it was big money at the time. By passing it down, being able to pass it down to his children and on down to his grandchildren and on down to his great-grandchildren, insofar as that's protected, the Rockefeller family has been allowed to establish its position in what we can call the oligarchy. Right? They have a level of wealth that protects them and insulates them from the institution of free enterprise. They don't want to be part of the free. They don't want to be part of a free economy where everyone competes head-on, all right? We all have basically the same opportunities. They want to establish their family in a way where they will be running this country from now until, you know, I don't know, the space aliens land. And that's what's wrong. This estate tax, I don't know where you'd draw the line, but I would tax heavily anything over, say, $500,000. What I'm saying is you don't get a free ride just because your daddy was rich. You have to get out there in the free market and you have to kick and gouge and compete, right? Just like everybody else. You don't get a free ride from now until, who knows, 100 years, your family, because John D. Rockefeller got lucky, got rich, got smart, whatever, but he got a bunch of money. The next generation should have to compete. They should have to fight for their own wealth. It shouldn't just be institutionalized. And there's a problem here. Again, this lays the foundation for an oligarchy, a government, a nation that's run by the rich. And that's where we kind of are.
That's where we are.
We're protecting the wealthy, and we're going to eliminate the estate tax. I don't think we should.
I agree.
John D. Rockefeller, make all the money you want, but when you die, we're not just...
And the thing of it is, yeah, but Al...
besides just hand it over to the kids and the grandkids so they can continue to lord it over everyone else.
And the thing of it is, they know they have this tax due. They know this is going to happen. So they get all kinds throughout their wise decisions and making their money, but they do get subsidies, they get tax cuts, they get, you know, they get things that regular people don't get in order for them to grow their wealth. And not only that, they know this is due, so there's plans and there's programming and ways that they can offset a lot of this tax that would be due at the end of their lives. So when you hear the Republicans talk about, oh, farmers, you know, farmers lose their farms and it has to be sold to pay taxes, they go back and they incorporate numbers from like 1995 when the estate tax was only like $650,000. And that did ruin a lot of, that did hurt people. Now for a couple, it's what, $11 million for a couple and almost $6 million for a single person, for a sole survivor. So, you know, the numbers are bigger.
I don't even worry about 11 million. I agree that they're bigger. I don't worry about 11 million. We could debate that. But when we're talking about billions of dollars property, in estate, in stocks,
that's my point, Al. It doesn't affect anybody. People don't lose their farms. If people were losing their farms and people were, that is wrong. But that's not the case anymore. But Republicans use that argument in order to push this through. And that's the one thing that does bother me about Trump, because he says, oh, these tax cuts don't benefit me at all. Well, they do. They do. We have a caller. We have Lance from Texas calling us. Good afternoon, Lance.
Hi, Mel. How are you?
How you doing, Lance?
You're talking about Will Rogers, and I've been following that guy since fifth grade. I grew up in Fort Worth, where the Will Rogers Memorial Coliseum is, and I did a paper on him. But his quote, the most brilliant quote he ever said, was it was shortly after Roosevelt had confiscated the gold. I believe it was around Christmas of 33. And they were interviewing him on the radio, and he said, I'm not so worried about the return on my money as the return of my money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he understood what had just happened.
I agree. It's kind of surprising, and it's unfortunate and shameful, and it's tragic how much we the people have allowed government to get away with. And it's not just apathy and it's not just laziness. A lot of it is just sheer ignorance. We need a better education coming out of our schools, where we are taught about civics and taught that, you know, our business, our fundamental business as Americans is not to trust the government, but to keep an eye on them at all times. And that's a lesson they're not going to teach. You're going to have to learn that the hard way.
I'll leave you with this quote, and everybody knows the quote, but absolutely no one knows who said it. He was an esthetician named George Santayana, and the quote is, those who do not remember history are destined to repeat it.
Yep. George Santayana. He was not just an anesthesiologist. He was also a writer. I can't think of the names of the books he's written, but well-known writer.
An esthetician, a philosopher who studies beauty. He wrote a book called A Sense of Beauty. I did one of my theses in college on that and The Poetics of Music by Igor Stravinsky in the form of Six Lessons. But
anyway. I thought you said anesthesia. All right, thank you, Lance.
Anesthetician.
Yep.
Anesthetician.
Right. Thanks for the call.
Well, thank you, Lance. And I pulled up Will Rogers, and one of the things he was widely quoted. He says, "I'm not a member of an organized political party." He says, "I'm a Democrat." And another one he would comment.
That's appropriate today, isn't it?
He was widely quoted and said, "I don't make jokes. I just watch the government and report the facts." So, yeah, interesting. Yeah. Interesting character. Yeah. So thank you, Lance. I enjoyed that.
We got one article here from DC Clothesline. New plague, Black Death, can kill in 3 hours. Who fears who? And that means the World Health Organization fears global pandemic. You've probably all heard that there is a disease that's broken loose in Madagascar that is the Black Plague, apparently. It is apparently the same plague that afflicted the world back in the 1300s, right? Went through Europe. Went through. It came out of Asia, went all the way through Europe. It was probably the single greatest loss of human life on a percentage basis that the world's ever seen. It was a terrible, terrible, terrible problem. And it was early 1300s. Apparently, this is the same or similar disease. This can kill in 3 hours. You catch it now, and you could be dead before you get home for dinner. Nearly 200 people have already died in the nation of Madagascar. Newest and most deadly strain of pneumonic plague have seen by World Health officials. At least 10 other East African countries have enacted pandemic preparation plans out of abundance of caution after a medical worker told a local news crew that the virus can kill in 3 hours. Immunization expert Dr. Matthew Avison inadvertently backed the medical worker's claim when he told the Daily Star Online that the new strain is totally resistant to antibiotics, which he also said was extremely rare. Totally resistant to antibiotics. Moreover, a spokesman for the World Health Organization has already expressed his concern that the Black Death, you know, it's also called that, Black Plague, pneumonic plague, could in fact become a global pandemic. I don't know what they're going to do, but this is serious business. I mean, again, this is apparently something, maybe the same thing, maybe something very similar to the original Black Plague that afflicted the world back in the 1300s. Biggest biological disaster this species has ever suffered. We're going to take a break for financial survival. We've got a couple more commercials, and we'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two Black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Alfred Adiskin. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Got an article here from Bloomberg. And the headline is, Dollar in Danger of Weakening for 6 Years, Morgan Stanley says. The dollar is threatened by 6 years of weakness, as stronger global growth will outweigh any boosts in interest rate increases by the Federal Reserve System. And this is according to Morgan Stanley. And investors should short the greenback against emerging market currencies as the growth gathers momentum. And what they mean by that is sell the dollar against these emerging markets and even the euro, because the dollar is going to lose value. If you can sell it now, you can get a better price for it than you'll be able to get, who knows, 6 months or a year from now. But the article is amusing to me because, well, I think the dollar, they say the dollar in danger of weakening for 6 years. 6 years? Are you crazy? The dollar has lost 96% of its value compared to gold over the last 45 years or so. It's down where it's only got 4% or less of its original value as compared to 1971. In 6 years, how much more can it lose? I mean, I'm going to be surprised if the dollar can hang on for 6 years. Oh, in danger of weakening for 6 years. I think it's interesting. It's coming from Morgan Stanley, and they're saying there's a problem here. We don't want to alarm anybody right now, but there's a problem here. I think the problem is the horizon for the dollar and perhaps its demise, but some sort of dramatic change. I don't believe it's 6 years away. And I don't believe it's going to be business as usual for the next 6 years. I think you're going to see serious changes. And it's just interesting to me. Morgan Stanley says implicitly, they say, well, there's going to be trouble, but they're giving it 6 years. I don't think 6 years is going to fly. They also say the yen will strengthen as at some point the Bank of Japan will become the next European central bank and move away from controlling the bond markets yield curve. The person being quoted here said, we are now currently in an environment where synchronized global growth has rarely been as strong as it is now. And what they mean by that is that the American economy is growing and the Japanese economy is growing and the Chinese economy is growing and the European economy is growing. And this is an important concept for globalism, for a new world order. Because in the past, when the Japanese economy was running hot and they had to impose taxes or whatever in order to try to cool off the Japanese economy, what they did is they drove currency out and went to the United States. And likewise, when laws were implemented at the United States, and because the economy was running too hot and currency fled to Japan, and the net result is, as long as the two economies were not synchronized, you couldn't use the same strategies at the central banks. What was good for one economy was not good for the other. And if you tried to do something to stimulate or to slow one economy, you necessarily did what was wrong for one of the other economies when the money fled to it. And it is interesting to hear Morgan Stanley say that the environment has seldom been as synchronized as it is today. It's not necessarily a good sign, and it may be. And part of the reason for that is this: if we're all going up at the same time, it's evidence we're all going to go down at the same time too. Sooner or later, something's going to go south, and when it does, it might happen in Europe or China or Japan or here in the United States, but it's going to probably take the rest of the world economies with it at the same time. We're all in the same boat right now, or increasingly all in the same boat, and I don't know that that's a good thing. Might be good for central banks, but I don't think it's good for the people long term. What's next, Melody? Anything?
Well, you know, I mean, they are. I saw some reports out of Goldman Sachs. They're all making their, you know, predictions already for the markets next year. What's going to be hot? What's not going to be hot? And I don't think anybody really knows. I think next year is going to be a real interesting year. It's going to be a very volatile year. And, you know, this is part of the weakness of the dollar. I mean, they need to have a weaker dollar for trade if they're going to commit to lower taxes for corporations with the hope of bringing repatriate funds back into the states. They're going to have a lower dollar.
They're going to have a lower dollar to diminish the real size of the national debt.
Mm-hmm. And it also helps imports. So, yeah. Or exports. It helps exports. So they do, you know, that's all part of the, it's all part of the equation. And is a lower dollar. Now, does it mean that the dollar is going to go to zero next year? No, I don't think it will. But there's a lot of things going on in this world. And, you know, you have the king of Saudi. He's stepping down, so now his son will have full reign. And there's a lot of reasonings behind that. And I don't think we will see the impact of that change of power, you know, probably until next year, whether we see it through crude oil prices, whether we see it through the petrodollar, whether we see it through, and we still have North Korea we have to deal with. And I heard that North Korea and President Xi of China are to meet, I believe. I heard or read or, and supposedly.
Where will they be meeting? In China or in North Korea?
I just heard that they were supposed to be meeting. And I don't know if I saw it when I was watching the news this morning or something with comments, and I really, until now, forgot to follow up on that. But, you know, if they meet, it'll, you know, that's an interesting, that means possibly our nuclear war with North Korea will no longer exist. Maybe something can happen or something positive will come out of it, but... So a lot of things are going to go on. If that doesn't work, yeah, then there's still North Korea to deal with. And I think that's probably what motivated President Xi of China to you know, make some sort of contact and to perhaps take this to the next level. Because I assure you, just like I think it was Jim Rickards who said Trump's reasons for really doing this Asia tour is to get backing for a possible conflict with North Korea, to get some backing, to get the allies, and, you know, try to make a last ditch effort. So maybe Trump said to China, well, you know what, we're going to war, we're going to do this and this, if you don't do something first. Maybe he finally brought them to the table and really did the line in the sand. And we'll see. I don't know if we know, but those are just speculations, and we'll see what comes out of that.
I'll tell you one thing. If I were going to meet with anyone from North Korea, I would want to do it in some place other than North Korea. I don't want to meet with them for dinner. I saw a report that they had a guy who escaped from North Korea, got shot three times crossing the border, but he did get into South Korea. They had to operate on him in order to remove bullets and the rest of that sort of thing. He survived, but they discovered that he was riddled with parasites. Right? And what they think this is attributable to is the people are so hungry, right? They're eating almost anything, and they can't afford chemical fertilizer in North Korea, and they have been fertilizing their crops with human waste. And the result, they suspect, is that the people of North Korea are riddled with parasites. And the implication here is that, I mean, you can't continue that much longer. They will either riot and overthrow Kim Il-sung on his own, on their own, or they will begin to perish to where they're so weak they're going to need medical care, and someone's going to have to say, okay, bring in the Americans, bring in the Chinese, bring in somebody. We can't run our country and keep our people alive. But this implies that there's a big problem over there, and if you're invited to dinner in a North Korean restaurant, probably better not attend.
Well, actually, let me get an update on that. President Xi of China is dispatching his special envoy. So I guess he's not going to North Korea.
You eat the
Song
food.
Song Tao, the head of Beijing's international department, will head to North today, I guess it is. And when Trump was in Beijing last week, he said that the world must act fast. So that is, you know, pretty much saying do something now. Although there's... No, they really don't think much will come out of it.
I mean, we'll see what happens. This report about, I don't know if this is one guy with a lot of parasites. It doesn't prove anything. It's evidence. It does not prove. But if it's true that the North Koreans are riddled with parasites, it's going to shorten their life expectancy. It's going to reduce their strength. It's going to reduce their vitality. A lot of things are going to happen. We're talking about a country that is staggering along. It's marching, but it's really staggering. And you give them enough time, and they may collapse on their own. The country just may collapse. Maybe it won't be necessary. Just keep go ahead, go eat some more vegetables, there, people. We'll just wait over here on the side until you all fall down. Who knows? I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I'm saying that influence may be there, and there must be people in North Korea that know about it. There must be generals, and there must be other people who realize we got to do something. And it can't be stick with our premier. Kim is not the guy. Telling us, essentially what he's saying is to eat you know what. All right? And that's evidence that there's something wrong here. Big time. This is dangerous and probably deadly and certainly weakening. Anyway, don't eat. If they're invited to North Korea, pack a lunch. You know, bring a Snickers bar or whatever it is you think you're going to need, but don't be eating. Don't be eating the food there. Got an article here from Business Insider. This is interesting. This is about Bitcoin. The average Bitcoin investor doesn't plan to sell their coins until they hit more than $190,000 per coin. This is from Business Insider. Bitcoin has been on a tear, trading up more than 500% this year. But it doesn't look like Bitcoin investors plan on giving up their coins just yet. This is according to a new Lend EDU survey of 564 American Bitcoin investors. It's a survey. You know, it's not God's truth necessarily, but it's a survey. Just 32% of investors surveyed said they had ever sold some of their Bitcoin holdings. They're hanging on tight. You understand? The survey found the average Bitcoin investor doesn't plan to sell until Bitcoin reaches $196,195 per coin. That's 26 times its current value. You know, does that suggest, am I the only one that looks at that and says, isn't that a little crazy? Isn't that a little crazy to sit there and say, I'm going to invest in IBM. I'm going to invest in General Motors. I'm going to invest in anything, and I'm going to hang on until it goes up 26 times its current price. Sears. I could invest in Sears, and I'd have a better chance of it going up 26 times. It may turn out to be worth nothing, but Bitcoin is going to go up. According to charts at Brave New Coin, the Bitcoin's current market capitalization is just over $131 billion. If I'm understanding these numbers correctly, when the price of Bitcoin reaches $196,000, the Bitcoin market cap will be 26 high times higher than it is at the current $131 billion. That would work out to $3.4 quadrillion invested in Bitcoin. I'm hanging on until the world invests $3.4 quadrillion in Bitcoin. According to How Stuff Works, the total amount of money in the U.S. currency in the MO, M1, M2, M3, in all the world is about $1.2 trillion. Of course, there are other currencies in the world, and I don't know what they add up to, but just the same, the average current Bitcoin holders are apparently determined to hang on to their Bitcoins until dollar investments in Bitcoin are 2.8 times greater than today's total global U.S. dollar currency supply. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think it can possibly happen except in the context of hyperinflation. I think the truth is that Bitcoin holders are playing Bitcoin chicken with each other. And what they're doing is I buy some Bitcoin and Melody buys some Bitcoin, and we encourage other people to buy Bitcoin. I encourage Melody to buy more Bitcoin because it will increase the price of the value of my Bitcoin.
And I would say no.
Oh, you might not. You might be saying, hey, you need to get some more Bitcoin. Let's drive that price higher and higher and higher. Okay, let's drive it higher. Everybody's hanging on, and they are betting. Everybody knows, or just about everybody knows, this really is a mania. This is a fever. This is a tulip time again, as they had in Holland back 1600s or whatever, tulip mania. This is a kind of nonsense, and everybody is betting. I know it's going to collapse. I'm going to buy this stuff because it's going up so high I can't resist it. I'm going to buy it, and it's going to go higher and higher and higher. And when it collapses, I'm going to be one of the smart ones, and I will get out the door while the rest of you dummies are left behind losing everything. And that's what everybody, I think, is, or that's what most people are secretly thinking about holding Bitcoin. I'm smart enough to get out the door and capture my savings at the last, capture my profits at the last possible minute. I'm going to time this market. I'm going to do it brilliantly, and I'm going to emerge as a genius. Everybody's going to say, oh, you're so smart. But most people, everybody's saying that. Everybody's thinking it, but they're playing chicken. They're betting I can get out the door faster than you can, Melody, or faster than anyone else if you catch my drift. Dangerous game. It's going to wind up where somebody's going to get hurt, and a lot of people are going to get hurt badly. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back on Monday. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's true.